So tickt Berlin. Dein Podcast von und mit Nikolai Tegeler.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer ganz besonderen Folge von So tickt Berlin. Heute mit zwei Menschen, deren Leidenschaft für Musik, Geschichte und Vision ein Stück Weltkultur mitgeprägt hat. Wir sind jetzt wieder mal im Estrel Hotel, wie man es unschwer hören kann. Hinter uns, vor uns überall Menschen. Wir sind im Foyer ein bisschen abseits vom großen Trubel, aber leider immer noch so, dass man eine Menge von dem Trubel da draußen im Foyer mitbekommt. Mike und Bernadette Byrne sind die ursprünglichen Gründer von The Beatles Story, der weltweit größten und heute ältesten noch aktiven Ausstellung über das Leben und Wirken der Beatles in Liverpool. Was 1990 im restaurierten Albert Dock begann, war viele Jahre zuvor ein Herzensprojekt, geboren aus Begeisterung, persönlicher Nähe zur Band und einem unbeirrbaren Glauben daran, dass die Geschichte der Fab Four in ihrer Heimatstadt dauerhaft erzählt werden muss. Mike ist selbst Musiker, unter anderem der Merseybeat-Szene, und spielte in denselben Clubs wie die Beatles. Bernadette war nicht nur Stammgast im legendären Cavern Club, sondern hatte auch eine enge Beziehung bzw. eine enge persönliche Beziehung zu, jetzt ratet mal, George Harrison, inklusive Liebesbriefen und handgeschriebenen Erinnerungsstücken, die heute im Museum ausgestellt sind. Mit wenig Geld, ohne institutionelle Unterstützung, aber mit viel Mut, Durchhaltevermögen und Liebe zur Sache haben die beiden es geschafft, was vielen zuvor nicht gelang. Sie schufen eine dauerhafte Hommage an die Beatles, die bis heute Millionen von BesucherInnen auf der ganzen Welt anzieht. Ich freue mich sehr, dass ihr hier seid. Hallo Mike und Bernadette. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi Nikolai. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much that you will be a part of my podcast. I mean, how is your German so far?
How's my German? Very bad. Very klein. Mine's kleiner. Very, very little.
I can count to 10. You didn't get anything from my introduction of yourselves.
Speak so quickly. It's bad enough when it's slow.
I think you were explaining that we are the founders of the Beatles exhibition in Liverpool.
Definitely, yeah, one of them, yeah. And two really beautiful living people, and I'm really glad that I met you guys. Mike, could I say Bernie?
Yes, of course.
Is it your...
People call me Bernie.
Yeah, is it?
My family used to call me Det.
Really?
Detty.
Detty.
Det means you're in debt for things.
So. Ah, because your real name is Bernadette, so Detty or Bernie. Yes. Ah, okay. And Mikey?
But you know, just Mike. But the Beatles used to call Bernadette Bernadette.
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 Really?
Bernadette. Yeah, not Bernadette.
Why is that happening?
It was just like a little. It was like a little nickname for her. Oh, it's Bernadette.
That's fun. Mike and Bernie, what a big pleasure that you're here. Let's start at the beginning. Do you remember the very, very first moment when the idea of the Beatles, the story, truly crystallized for you both? Was there a specific spark that made you say, we have to do this?
As far as I'm concerned, after we'd been, there was an earlier exhibition called The Beatles, Beatles City it was called, and it was taken over to America, to Dallas of all places, which is an unusual place to take it. It wasn't much of a success over there, and there was some fantastic memorabilia, but eventually all the partners fell out and the memorabilia was scattered everywhere. And so we came back to Liverpool and we said, this is crazy. We need a Beatles exhibition here in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And that was when, I had trained to become a Beatle guide just before we went, and I knew how popular they were. So as I was out traveling, doing a city tour one day, I went down to the Albert Dock and it was just being developed, the waterfront, and went down under what was the tobacco warehouse in those days. And when I got home, I said to Mike, I've seen just the place
where
we could open the Beatles story. And so he went down to have a look. So you can
Right there. And then the actual Albert Dock was built in 1846.
Wow.
Named after Prince Albert.
Yeah.
Victoria's husband, you know.
Yeah.
And so it had been left for many, many years after the war. Nothing happened there. It was empty. Parts of it were crumbling.
Oh.
Some had war damage.
Yeah.
From the war. And in 1984... The Liverpool had a resurgence, and we. I'm going to start that bit again. You can cut this bit.
No, it's fine. It's totally fine. It's good.
Cut it up.
No, fine.
In 1981 in Liverpool, we had riots, rioting all over the city.
Yeah,
places were burned down.
Wow.
And our government said, "Oh, we can't have riots and." Cities.
Yeah.
So they sent up a government minister to Liverpool to fix it.
Wow.
To sort us out.
Yeah.
So this guy came up and he was very good. He looked at the Albert Dock and he went, this could be a fantastic facility with museums, with restaurants, boats.
Wow.
And so that took it started in 1984. And then we found it, came back from America, Dallas, the old Beatle exhibition, which actually failed.
Yeah. Oh.
It wasn't ours. It was somebody.
It failed in Dallas.
We were managing it.
Oh.
We were managing it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wrong area.
But it was the wrong place, wrong time. So we came back without jobs and we said, let's go to the tourism board. Let's talk to them and say, we've got our Beatle exhibition. They didn't help us.
Jesus.
And as Bernadette said, she went down to the Albert Dock, saw the basement, and saw this place where we could recreate our dream.
Yeah.
Which included a replica of the Cavern Club.
Unbelievable.
So that was great. And then I raised all the money. £750,000.
Jesus.
Bernadette wrote the story. We designed the exhibition on the back of an envelope. And then we took architects and we just worked.
We had a very good friend called Phil who put in the majority of the funding, and he knew a couple of others who he said would be interested. So all together, we managed to raise as much as we needed to.
Yeah.
To get it open.
And then it took 2 years to design and actually build. And then we opened it in 1990, and it was a critical success from day one.
Jesus.
And now, 35 years later, it's still there. It's had over 5 million visitors.
Jesus.
And it's the biggest exhibition in the world.
For the Beatles.
Yeah.
I mean, but I couldn't believe that the government or the mayor of Liverpool doesn't get any.
He was not from Liverpool. He wasn't English, was he? I don't know where he was from, but he was somewhere overseas, and he went, Beatles. Beatles are rubbish.
What?
Who wants the Beatles?
What?
Yeah.
The head of the tourism.
Head of the tourism board. So I don't know what
he.
Obviously, he didn't like their music for some reason.
I mean, this is one of the biggest boy groups. Yeah,
exactly. They were the first boy.
They influenced. Till today, the music world. Yeah,
of course.
How could he say that?
Because he wasn't a Beatles fan.
No,
Jesus.
No.
Because he was stupid.
But this is so interesting. I mean, there's really less money to build up this. Big dream. How could you tell us the big secret? I mean, you got this big vision, this big dream, and you put everything together. I mean, now it's a big success, but in the beginning it was really hard, right?
I think we recognized, though. I'd become a Beatle guide, and I'd realize people from all over the world were coming to Liverpool to see what was left of the cabin where they started out. But the cabin by that time had been completely demolished. And they kept moving it next door, next door, next door. So the cabin that's there today is about the third cabin in the old warehouses.
Oh.
And they'd started doing Beatle tours in Liverpool. In fact, the guys who own the cabin today did the training at the same time as myself, and we all became beetle guides around the city.
Yeah.
And so they got on with doing the cabin, and we said we still need the exhibition.
Definitely.
We know there's so many overseas visitors coming here, and it's all over the world, you know, it's popular. So we went ahead and took a chance, really, and the support of probably our major partner, it was through him, really, we managed to get it off the ground.
I think we did it because we were amateurs.
Yeah.
We had no expertise in exhibitions. We didn't have any money ourselves, but we were there. We were originally from the Liverpool 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Bernadette, as you said in your introduction, was down at the cavern, and she went out with George Harrison.
Yeah.
She knew George. She knew Paul McCartney well.
Wow.
I was in a group, one of 350 groups who played in Liverpool at the time. And so I played at the same places as the cabin, as the Beatles.
Wow.
And I knew them not as well as Bernard. I knew them. Hi, Paul. Hi, George. You know. And I knew all the other big groups in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And so I think what made our Beatles exhibition a success, the fact that we were there and we had it in us.
Yeah.
And then the other good thing was Bernadette becoming a Beatle guide in 1983. I was still in marketing and promotion, which you know every night at Rock Around the Clock, marketing and promotion. But I was always a musician, always doing stunt sits and knockout competitions, all-night disco marathons, sponsored swims, all crazy things.
Wow.
And so I think our enthusiasm, our expertise, the fact that we knew the Beatles, that's what made the Beatles story right.
So now you're big heroes in Liverpool, right?
No, we're not heroes at all.
No.
Nobody knows we started it.
But I mean, this exhibition is a really big tourism guide. I mean, the Beatles belongs to Liverpool like the Berlin Tower belongs to Berlin.
What we say is the Beatles are to Liverpool what Shakespeare is to Stratford, or Elvis is to Memphis.
Memphis, yeah.
There's no, you know, the Beatles don't belong anywhere else. There's only one Beatles, and they're from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, this is really fantastic to hear that. What would you give, do you have some advices for youngsters to start with a big dream, but in the beginning it's really hard? What is your advice to them?
I think
to stick into
it. Go for it and try and ask anybody who you think might be able to help in any way, because all the little bits eventually then seem to come together. And so even if you do it bit by bit to achieve what you're aiming for, if you feel so much enthusiasm, it's a good chance you'll succeed.
Yeah, and don't give in.
Yeah,
don't take no for an answer.
Yeah. Huh?
If somebody says no, shuts the door on you, go to the next door, open the next door.
Oh, yeah.
And keep doing that.
Yeah.
Because that's what we did.
That too, yeah.
I had to write a business plan, which I didn't know what a business plan was in my training, but I learned and I did a very good business plan. And I took it to every bank in Liverpool. I took it to all big institutions, and most of them said, no, 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 but one said yes.
Ugh.
And that's what it happens
here.
And it's the same with the, you know, that we have written a book in the last 2 years called The Birth of the Beatles Story.
Yeah.
And when we wrote that, we couldn't find a publisher.
Oh, what?
So what you have to do, you know, we wrote what they call a synopsis.
Yeah.
A three-page synopsis of the book. And we sent it to 100 publishers.
Jesus.
And we didn't get replies from 90. We got replies from half a dozen saying, what a good idea, but it's not for us. And then we were very lucky. We got a company in Norway who publish books on music.
Uh-huh.
And they liked it.
Yeah.
So stick to it.
Stick to it.
Yeah.
Believe it.
Trying.
Try.
Believe it.
Don't stop.
Yes.
Yeah, believe in yourself, really.
This is a good point. Yeah. Yeah. Believe in yourself.
I believe that you can do it. You know, it's...
And I mean, you're the best example for that, right? Could we go back in these days? Could you describe how was that? I mean, when you see these days, 2025, and back then in the 60s, how was life there? I mean, I was born in 1978, and you are a, I mean, you more than a part of the Beatles. You had a relationship to George Harrison. Just now, Paul McCartney. By the way, are they visited the exhibition as well?
No, the Beatles never came to the...
No,
they don't endorse...
Any...
I don't know if you understand this word.
Yeah.
They don't endorse any exhibition.
Okay, understand. No. But back to the first question. Could you describe... I mean, not the whole... You couldn't describe the whole time, but is there something what you maybe miss or... what you still like in these days, what you still missed in the past, or
I just don't.
Back then?
When you go now, you go into a music club and the kids are all at the front, maybe dancing or just crowded at the front. But it is so small, the cabin.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like the Beatles were where you are.
Jesus.
You were here. And you don't
just
see
less than a meter.
Photographs, yeah. And then it was so tiny, there was a little coffee bar at the back. So in their break, they would go to the back of the coffee bar. And those who weren't just there for a chat or their lunch would go. And some of them would say, can we have autographs? They'd chat to them and they'd be friendly, make jokes. And it was just... And then there was a little pub across the road called The Grapes, where they often used to go after they'd finished playing at lunchtime. And so some of the boys and girls that weren't working would go in and meet them in there. I always had to go practically halfway through the show because I had to go back to work. But it was so hot in the cabin, they sprayed it with disinfectant to keep the unpleasant smells away, like smoke, cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
And the men's toilets, unfortunately.
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs, yes. And I used to go back to work in hairdressing where your hair was meant to look nice. Like a drowned rat, my hair was stuck to my head, and my boss told my sister who worked with me, you've got to stop your sister going to that smelly place at lunchtime. She looks like a drowned rat when she comes back. But it didn't stop me.
There was no air conditioning in the cabin club.
Jesus.
And it was small, and 600 people would crush into it.
Jesus.
And so it was so hot that the condensation would pour down the walls and fuse, blow all the amplifiers and the lights, so you'd have to wait till they fixed it, and then you start playing again.
My goodness.
It was...
I showed you that, didn't I?
Yeah, I saw that.
See how low the ceiling is. It's very low.
The
ceiling was probably...
A really cool picture, and this is an original, right?
It's an original. Well, the guy who took... who was it who took them there?
There was one of the photographers
on it now,
Peter Kay.
But tell me, I mean, I see you in the front. This is so cute, unbelievable.
Yeah.
When was the first time? Met them?
I actually saw them before I saw them at the cabin. We went to a club in Liverpool in a very rough part of the city that our parents had said, don't ever go to that place. It's rough, and there's always fights at the... Anyway, we had seen or heard about the Beatles, and we decided we were going to see them. And so we were both 15, my friend and I, and we went on the bus to Hambleton Hall. And when we got there, we'd actually gone to see another band, Farron's Flamingos, they were called.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went in, it was crowded, so you had to hang your coat into a cloakroom at the back where the toilets and things were. And we worked our way to the front. Everybody wanted to be at the front. Farron came on. Jerry and the Pacemakers were on. And then at the end of the night, the Beatles came on, and we'd never seen them properly before. We noticed there was one guy at the back who had his head down, and he had a guitar, but he didn't really look like he was playing it. We found out later, many years later, that was Stuart Sutcliffe.
No.
Who hadn't... really didn't want to be in the band at all. The others were so exciting. They had leather clothes, leather suits on, cowboy boots, and they were so wow in your face, as it were, you know, that we thought, oh, we'll have to come and see them again, you know. John Lennon, they were so funny as well. They were making jokes all the time. When the show was over, it was just the kids at the front were all screaming and shouting. They must have seen them somewhere else, you see, before we did.
So it was not only the music, it was the whole entertainment?
Yes, what it was the whole image. They weren't like ordinary bands who had sort of all the same jackets on and were very neat and tidy, you know. We thought, in those days, we used to have sort of rough-looking boys that you had to call teddy boys. I don't know if you've heard of teddy boys. They used to be violent.
Toy boys, you know, the word toy boy.
No, teddy boys, they used to go around with knives. They had flick knives. They had chains, bicycle chains. And there was often fights in parts of the city. So we thought, because we were so young, we thought, that's cool, you know, we like them, we'll go and see them again. Anyway, as we were leaving, we went to get our coats and we said, we'll go and see them again. And my friend's coat had been stolen.
No,
so Jesus. We were only 15 Jesus. Years old and we were standing there going, oh dear, what are we going to do, crying, you know.
No, yeah.
My mother's going to kill me for going home without.
Yeah.
Luckily for us, Jerry and his band were clearing up and they said, hang on girls, what's the matter, you know. And we said, a coat's been stolen. He said, if you wait till we've packed the gear and we'll give you a lift home. So he kindly took us home and I can't quite remember what happened to her because she got into trouble though, when we were forbidden to go ever again. But we had seen the Beatles by then and we decided we've got to go and see them. And we found out where they were playing. We had a newspaper in those days called the Mersey Beat. And so that always listed where all the bands around were playing. So then we started to go to the Cavern and from there it went on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that goes back to the Beatles actually playing in Hamburg.
Yeah.
Because the close of Bernadette has just explained.
Yeah.
Before they went to Hamburg, they might have had leather jackets, black t-shirts and cowboy boots.
Yeah.
But after they had been to Hamburg three times and they'd met Astrid Kircher and Klaus Voormann and the other people there, they came back and they copied them.
Ugh.
And they had leather trousers as well, you see. So Stuart fell in love with Astrid Kircher and he stayed in Hamburg to study art at Hamburg College of Art under Eduardo Palazzi, who is a famous artist. So he stayed and then Astrid cut his hair in the French style.
Ah,
the fringe.
The fringe, yeah.
So Stuart was first with the fringe.
Ah.
And then I think George. Oh, I'll have it. And then Paul. And then John.
Ah.
So the third time they came back from Liverpool, I saw them at a different club. And it was like an atomic bomb going off. They came on stage and they just blasted everyone.
Wow.
They had this image with leather trousers, the leather jacket.
So it was the first time ever that the group was like this?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And Stuart had stayed away, you know, stayed here in Hamburg. And they were just, it was like it hit you in the chest.
Wow.
The sound.
Wow.
And they'd improved so much because 2 years before, they weren't the best group in Liverpool.
Mm.
You know, Rory Storm and the Hurricanes were the best group in Liverpool. Because Ringo Starr was in there. But then 2 years later, 3 years later, they came back and, of course, they kicked out Pete Best and they took Ringo Starr. And that became the beginning of your relationship with George, really, wasn't it? From 1962 to early 1963.
Yeah, could you give us a little insight? How was the first time you met George Harrison? I mean, there was you told us already.
Yeah.
It was really crowded.
Yeah.
600 people in this really tiny space. Mm-hmm. How could the Beatles?
It started with Paul, really, because we used to walk around out of Matthew Street to catch our buses home, and we all three of us lived in different parts of the city. Two of them lived near each other. I lived in further down. And so I would, I was often on my own at the bus stop. And the first time Paul had a green console or something. He had a nice new car, really. He was the only one at the time that had a car. And he was giving John a lift home. And as he drove past the bus stop, he slowed down and said, do you want a lift home? So we all said, oh, yes, please. The three of us, all four of us piled in. And anyway, I was the last to be dropped off because I lived closest to where John and Paul lived.
Uh-huh.
And then just as I got out of the car at my house and said, thank you very much, you know. And was it John that said to come? Oh, yeah, John suddenly said, Paul will be round to pick you up tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And I went, oh, I can't do that. I work till 6. And he just looked around at me and he went, he's not asking you to marry him. So I felt very embarrassed, of course, and I think Paul did too. But anyway, Paul got out the car and walked me to the front door and we made an arrangement to make it a bit later, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was Paul. And then the same thing happened with George. He used to drive a similar route and he offered me a lift home. And, oh, no, what was it with George? I got a note. No, I got my note. And,
well, it was, sorry, you're going to have to tell the Paul story first.
Paul, oh, yes, that's right. Yeah. Paul came around. Paul came around. He bought me a box of Maltesers. You know the sweets, the Maltesers? Have you said? I like
Maltesers. Yeah, of course. Yeah, Malteser, yeah.
Hmm. And I said, oh, thanks. You know, I said, I'm not quite ready. Just come in for a moment. And we had open coal fires in our houses in those days. You know, the open fire.
Yeah.
And my father was just lighting it to the evening. It was getting dark. And he needed some coal. The coal house used to be out in the back garden or backyard. And so while I was finishing getting my hair done and all that, he said to Paul, you used to hold a newspaper up to it to draw the flames, you know.
Yeah.
And Paul held the newspaper up and unfortunately it caught fire. And I just heard my father shouting or swearing at the top of his voice. And then poor Paul was very flustered. He was all in his nice jacket and everything. And I realised the paper had caught fire.
Jeez.
And so he said...
flames,
yeah, the flames were up in the, yeah, bits of flying around all over the place.
Goodness.
So I said, come on, let's go. And I just dragged Paul and said, we got out the house quick and left my dad. And from then, my father always said, that's the fella that nearly burnt our house down. And, that's how he remembered him, yeah. But at the end of we've been to the cinema and at the end of it, they used to go back to Rory Storm's house. Mm-hmm. And when we went in, Paul was in the back kitchen doing something and that George was sitting by the fire and said, oh, come sit here, you know. He was chatting away, very friendly. Anyway, when it was time to go, we went out to Paul, said, come on, we're going. And it was snowing outside, thick snow. And for some reason, George ran up behind me, tried to lift me up for some strange reason. And we both slipped and fell back. He fell first and I fell on top of him. So... Paul stood at the gate looking very mature and stupid kids, you know. And anyway, it was after that then I went home and then the following week or month, I'm not sure how long it was, George put a note through my door asking me to ring him.
Oh.
So that's how.
The rest is history. Oh my goodness.
History, yes.
Jesus Christ, what a story. This is so nice to listen to you guys. I mean, this is really nice. Thank you so much for sharing really nice.
When it's just a funny thing. You think how you acted as teenagers, you know, and you were just embarrassed or you didn't, you know, things that you wouldn't care about nowadays, really.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You could just, I don't know.
But then within 6 months, they had two records out. Love Me Do came out. At the end of 1962, and that was medium success. And 1963, the next record, Please Please Me, was a very big success. I got to number one. And so suddenly, from being this group who played in Liverpool and were very popular in Liverpool, they had two records in the charts. They were on television and they were on the Royal Variety Performance, which was, you know, a show in front of the Queen.
Yeah,
unbelievable. So within kind of 6 months, that happened. And Bernadette was with George while this was happening.
Wow.
And I remember you told me that George would come to your house with records, play records for you that he'd got from America.
Oh,
he had a sister in America.
He had a sister in America and she would send him Tamla Motown,
the groups,
Chuck Berry, The Marvelettes, Temptations. And so the Beatles played some of those, you know, and they recorded a few of those on their first two albums. Buddy Holly, they were very, they loved Buddy Holly as well. And George loved Carl Perkins.
Wow.
You know, so the rock and roll influences from the 50s influenced the Beatles.
And then they
were so different from everybody else because they started writing their own songs.
Yeah.
And that's what the magic of the Beatles is.
Yeah.
They've written 250 songs, you know.
Could you believe that? Yeah.
Anyway. You know, and they're all, most 99.9 are really good on them.
Really good on them, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And people know them.
Ah,
yeah, this is silver disc.
The first silver disc was for Please, Please Me.
Please, Please Me, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And that George bought, they give them actually a silver disc, you know, when they got there.
For selling 250,000 copies.
Oh.
And he brought this silver disc to the house, and it's obviously should be mounted on a case on the wall or somewhere in the case. And my mum said to him, "Oh, that looks nice. Can we play it?"
you know, naturally, you think it was. What a nice story. I mean, this is we could never end. I mean, there's so much more to. I'm pretty sure that you could tell us. But I would like to know how you both came together. How do you met each other?
Well, Reenie, really?
You tell the story about Reenie. Oh,
yeah,
your friend.
Yeah, my. Yes, my friend from the hairdressing shop was a half Greek lady called Reenie, and we were both apprentices at the same time. And she started to, she came to the cabin a few times, but mostly at lunchtime then. I think the Beatles had become quite well known, so they'd moved on. And we used to go to the, they were well known, sorry. I knew they had come well known. But the Beatles had sort of moved from Liverpool, but she happened to be going out with a boy called Pete Clark.
Uh-huh.
And who was he with the Escorts?
He was the drummer with the Escorts, who were another recording group in England.
Yeah. Ah, yeah.
And we had a coffee bar that we used to go and have our lunch at called the Cardoma Coffee Bar, or the KD we called it. And I went with Reenie and Pete down to the coffee bar this day, and he was a friend of Mike's, so introduced us.
After you divorced, could I say divorce with George Harrison?
George was way up, traveling the world.
Oh, yeah, I saw, okay.
This was 2 years later.
Yeah,
2 years
later.
Of course.
So as soon as they made a film, A Hard Day's Night, I saw Patty Boyd in it, and I said, well, not to you, because I didn't know you then. I said, oh, we'll go out with her. I just knew. He was quite typed, if you know what I mean. He used to go out with thin blonde women mostly, I think.
So Bernie and I met at the end of 1964, early 1965. So the Beatles, of course, had gone. They'd done Shea Stadium, they'd done Long Day's Night. And so we met in this Cardoma Cafe. And
By that time, I had sworn I wasn't going out with any more people who were in groups. I said,
I was in a group with Pete Clark. Wasn't
he?
We were in, yeah. So we were in, and then we went to Germany.
What was your secret? I mean, you belong together like since 1965.
We've been here. We got married in 1967, which the summer of love, and we just get on well together. We like a challenge. Well, she likes a challenge because I am always coming up with crazy ideas for doing something new. And the most crazy idea was building the Beatles story. And we did that together.
Yeah.
So we like doing things together.
Yeah.
Cool.
Is that right?
I think I'd agree with you.
And most of the time I just say, yes, dear. Yes, dear.
This is the secret.
This is the secret. Yes, dear.
Yes.
And I stay with her because I haven't got the passwords.
That's true. I deal with the money, you see.
And let me ask you one more last question, because you spent so much of your time and we still have to play a show tonight. I mean, this podcast is called So Tick Berlin, something like, what is your opinion about Berlin? Did you came up here in the city before, after the wall, or what is your
Well, we'd only heard, you knew more about Germany than I did. I'd only heard about it from the war years, of course, and I was quite surprised to see how many beautiful places there are now. Obviously very different from all the years gone by. But it's, I don't know, and everybody is so very friendly. It's a great, you know, to find, even though we're very lucky so many people speak English. I wish I'd learned a bit more German when I was at school, but everybody's very friendly, very kind, and so it's been quite enjoyable.
Wow. I think what I like about it is the diversity of the music that's here. And lots of big international stars have been to Berlin to record, David Bowie,
wow,
you know, etc. And the standard of musicianship in the show that we are playing here in the Astrel is just so high and so professional. And everybody's so good at what they do. It's so easy to be here.
Wow. That sounds really nice. Thank you so much. Because I'm raised and based in Berlin. I was born here. And it's so good to get a different kind of view, and especially from you guys. Come up that you still like it here.
Well, we love it here.
Yeah, and of course, with the Beatle connections, we feel like it's not a foreign country, because they came back with their stories, and we've over 50 odd years heard things about Germany and thought, got to be great. You know, we go to Spain, we go to France, and you know, it's fine. Yeah. It seems more like home in a way, really.
Oh, well, yeah, it's great. And meeting you as well, Nikolai, has been a highlight of my trip.
Wow, I'm getting red. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much for sharing this nice stories, a little piece of your life for me. So take care, stay at this much powerful couple that I still have in front of me right now. I really like you, I really love you, and hope we met each other, and maybe I will take you over to the next podcast, because I'm pretty sure there's something more to tell, to spread to the world, right?
Well, I hope so. You know, we never stop looking for the next challenge.
No. This is so good to hear.
Maybe.
No, thank you so much. Last words?
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Good. Auf Wiedersehen.
Same from me too.
Und ihr da draußen, denkt dran, bleibt zuversichtlich und fröhlich.
So tickt Berlin. Dein Podcast von und mit Nikolai Tegeler.